Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. The Encounter, conceived of, directed by, and starring Simon McBurney, is currently running at the Golden Theater in New York City. McBurney is a multi-Olivier Award-winning, Tony and SAG Award-nominated actor, writer, and director, and one of Europe's most original theater makers. The Encounter tells the true story of National Geographic photographer Lauren McIntyre in 1969, lost in Brazil as he encounters the Mayaruna, a remote people whose ancient traditions are uninfluenced by the Western world. In the play, McBurney also shares the story of his creation of this unique piece of theater. Molding and stretching the classic art form of storytelling, McBurney and the Encounter team use specific and immersive binaural audio technology and sound design. Each member of the audience wears headphones, which create an experience that uses their ears to trick their brain into telling their body and comprehension that events are happening that, in reality, aren't. A voice from over your shoulder, a mosquito in your face, a fire nearby, a warm breath a little too nearby.
If I were to breathe in your ear, your brain would tell you that I was really breathing in your ear, and it might even start to get hot.
Simon McBurney, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
The Encounter is astounding, and I will try to keep my amazement in reasonable check as I talk to you about it, but I just wanted to be upfront at the start to tell you that I was just gobsmacked by the entire evening.
Well, I'm delighted that it speaks to you because, of course, it's a very particular experience and not something that every theater goer expects to, forgive the use of the word, encounter when they walk into a Broadway house. And so I really have been very touched by people's responses here, because even though it is a piece perhaps outside of a lot of people's experience in the theater, and you know, we could say Hello Dolly it is not, nonetheless there's been the most amazing response, and that's very, as I say, it's very touching and well, humbling really.
When did you first discover the story of Lauren McIntyre, this particular story of his, and then how did you decide to turn it into a theater piece?
In 1994, I was given a copy of this quite remarkable account of Lauren McIntyre, the National Geographic photographer, whose aim was to find the source of the Amazon and ended up lost in the Amazon jungle on an experience which radically altered his perception of the world, you could say. I was given it by a wonderful British theatre director called Annie Castledine, who was a very close friend of mine and has died recently, but I know somehow that she's present here. And she gave it to me because she knew that the story and the themes within it were something that would fascinate me and disturb me and cause me to interrogate things about my own life. I didn't think I was ever going to make it into a theatre piece. It's in the middle of the Amazon jungle. It's the most biodiverse place on Earth. I thought, well, but nonetheless, the story and what it carries within it kept on haunting me, if you like. Mm-hmm. So much so that 20 years later, I started to try and think about whether it was possible to tell this story in front of an audience.
And then from that effort, that first effort, how did you discover the way that you would tell it, that you would be the man on stage telling the story, acting it out, and telling it as you remember it, you have to be careful not to keep saying encounter, as you remember the story, as you perform the story, and you also bring your life, your home life, into the evening performance?
Interesting question. One of the things that happens with me is I always forget exactly how something begins. But I can say this, that any theatre piece I ever make, even if it's a Shakespeare, one of the ways in which I begin to get involved with the piece is I tell the story to friends. And I feel that if I can tell the story in a way that I really understand it and can grip the listener, then I know that I'm on my way to being able to actually construct, direct, create a theatre show which is going to grip people in the audience. In this case, I found the story quite difficult to tell. And at first I thought, well, it might involve a lot of people, but it became clear to me that the principal image of this piece is what happens inside the head of this man, Lauren McIntyre, and what that implies about what happens inside our heads. I'm talking about our culture. Our culture, which is a Western culture, we are a consumer capitalist society. We think about the world in a certain way. We think about going about work, about time, all of these things which we think of as realities. And what happens in this story is that McIntyre is like that, and then he starts to think in a different way. So, to try and answer your question, mm-hmm. it was clear that lots of people in the story was not really very satisfactory because you no longer really had the sense of what was going on inside his head, or you'd be rather distanced to it. And then I encountered, there you go, that's the word again,
right.
This microphone through two remarkable Swedish artists, Martina Seitel and Krista Lundahl, who are quite well-known Swedish artists who work with binaural sound. Binaural means literally you can hear sound all the way around your head, as if you're the same effect as if you were wearing virtual reality goggles and you feel that you're in a room. Well, if you hear binaural sound, you also feel aurally that you are in the room. So here I was encountering that, and suddenly I thought, oh, that would place the audience in the position of literally being inside Lauren McIntyre's head. Now, there is this principal theme of the piece, which is what happens when you get detached from your normal surroundings. In other words, when you are completely alone, what is solitude like? Well, of course, as an audience, you can sit back and watch somebody playing, watching the solitude of Hamlet, and you can think about it quite kind of academically. But what I wanted always was people to get physically involved and feel that it was part of their experience. At that point, I thought, how can I make individual members of the audience feel alone? Well, by making them put on headphones. Then my producer said, that's crazy, you're only going to get 5 people in the audience, we can't give 500 people headphones. And so we thought, well, maybe we're going to do it for 5 people. But with the help of my sound designer, Gareth Fry, we designed a system whereby we could have very high quality headphones in every single seat, and everybody could get this experience of feeling this astonishing solitude and distance from their own culture. They can be placed literally in a totally different situation. And when I say this, I've placed the audience not only in the situation of being, as people understand now, in the middle of the Amazon jungle, but also in the position of me, Simon McBurney, the actor, the theatre maker, who is trying to understand this story and make this piece. So you also are plunged into the atmosphere, the sights, the sound, the whole sense of my own apartment in London with my daughter in the middle of the night, because that was the reality of my making it. I was constantly asking myself questions about the piece. Did this really happen? Did it happen to him? What does it imply about us, and so on? And of course, that happens when you're working. You have these questions late at night. Now, my daughter, when my wife is away, knows she can take advantage of me, so she gets up and down over a period of 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And since one of the themes of the piece is time, I thought, oh, that's interesting. So if the audience have a sense of this little girl getting up and down and going back to sleep, they'll have a sense of our time passing. And then you get an extraordinary contrast with the fact that when I'm telling the story, you're plunged back 45 years into the moment when McIntyre was in the jungle. So you have this sense of different times and different places, which is, I suppose, one of the things that people have said very frequently about it is, curiously, it is very cinematic. There is a sense in which theatre and cinema co-join, because you get so gripped and caught up in this extraordinary and disturbing story.
The physical appearance of the binaural microphone is a kind of a dummy head on one straight-up mic stand, center stage where a ghost light would be if the theater were dark. Do you...
And what a wonderful word that is, ghostlight.
Yes. Do you feel when you're performing that the microphone is a microphone, or because it's a face, do you think of it as a companion on the stage?
I think of it very much as a companion. I'm very grateful for its presence because it is like another actor. And one of the things that obviously I have to do is to evoke the presence of other people. Now, what I wish to happen is that the audience literally begin to see other people on stage. And because of the nature of this remarkable instrument, they do, but also not just because of the instrument, but because of the story. In other words, when you hear a story, the story is evoked as much in people's, in the listener's imagination, as it is in the telling of it. It's often said that the way a story is written is less about the words that tell the story, but the gaps between the words. In other words, the space where you imagine. You know, when I grew up, listening to radio for me was an incredibly visual experience. And here, what I am trying to do is to talk about our imaginations. That is one of the themes, because you get into the mind of McIntyre, yes, you find his extraordinary story, but also your own imagination is stimulated, jolted, disturbed, or in rather rare occasions, but it is possible, sometimes completely rejected altogether. People find it too much, you know, and they can't quite take it because they think they're seeing something or they, you know. So it is a much, the piece, if you like, is not only about the telling, about how it's told, the story and so on, but it is really at its heart about listening and what happens when you really listen to a story and you begin to construct it, make it for yourself in front of you.
The audience wears headphones, as we've mentioned. You also have like earbuds in. Are you hearing the same thing the audience is hearing, or do you have a unique mix? And I ask that because I can't imagine performing while hearing everything that I was hearing.
I have to have a unique mix because otherwise I would damage my ears.
Sure.
Because the buds are so deep in my ears. In fact, they're molded to my ears alone. But nonetheless, I have to. The curious thing is everything is reversed because I'm facing the audience. So if for the audience something is going from right to left, in my ears it's going from left to right, but I've got to look at it from right to left. Now that sounds very confusing, but I've got to make sure that the direction in which I look is the direction in which you're hearing it, which is opposite way from how I'm hearing it, if you understand what I mean. So there is a degree
sort of,
of coordination required in the performing. But in the end, for me, the technology is not important. It's just a tool. And yes, some people will talk about it and go, gosh, I've never seen any technology like that before on the stage. But do you know what? They must have said that when first in the late 18th century, the beginning of the 19th century, they discovered that lighting lime made an incredible light. And if it had a reflector behind it, you could illuminate part of the stage. And hence we have the name limelight. And that was an extraordinary new technology. Gas was another extraordinary technology. The use of the mechanization of sets, incredible technology. The use of sound and light and video, you know, the arrival of the helicopter in Miss Saigon, incredible new technology. So constantly the theater, which is a magpie art form, it's a, you know, we're thieves and charlatans in the theater. You know, we nick things, we steal from left, right, and center. This, for me, is just another tool. The important thing for me is the story and how the audience feel, and the fact that the audience feel touched, moved, disturbed, uncertain, that they want to talk about it afterwards. Some people are sort of, you know, when I come close to them during the performance, they sort of literally physically react. People turn around, other people cry out, some people roar with laughter. It's very strange because people feel alone. They have very highly individual reactions. And at the heart of it, they follow the story. It's the story and the themes that are important, and they ask questions of themselves, and they come away feeling, I hope, that something deeply within them is stirred, which is, after all, what we all want to feel when we come out of the theatre, both exhilarated and perhaps a little changed.
How is it that the show moves from London to New York City, and did you feel that you need to, or did you want to change anything in the transition in crossing the ocean?
Very interesting question. I mean, we speak the same language, but we have different words. You know, as famously, we know that when you finish at the restaurant, you ask for the check and pay with a bill. When we finished, we ask for the bill and pay with a check. So there are a lot of things which are very, very different here. I mean, that's a kind of facetious answer. But there is a very different vision of the world. And coming here, I knew that. And I began to, certainly over the previews, I constantly changed and shaped and developed the piece for the audience that was coming, because I tried to listen to them as to what they felt they understood, what they got, what they were used to, not used to. And indeed, it's still changing. I've been working with my understudy, and I've discovered a whole new bit of the show, and no doubt tonight when I go on, it will be different. So the piece will continue to develop over the time. And in fact, what the truth is, any new theatre audience you go in front of, you have to respond to them. The theatre doesn't just exist up on stage. The theatre is not a play. And it, in a sense, it's not even the actors moving on stage. Theatre is created by the audience, or more properly, in the interrelationship between performer and audience. And so in many ways, it's been an absolute revelation for me to play it here, because I realized that some things were simply not clear. And as a consequence, I think the show has enormously improved. And as even since opening night, it seems to have got stronger and stronger. It's also curiously faster. So that is a very exciting thing. People know me in London. So, and the kind of theatre that I play in, well, it's subsidised theatre, so it's going to be a particular kind of audience. But one of the thrills of coming to Broadway is knowing, well, this has to appeal to as wide an audience as possible. And so everything has to work on every single level. It's got to be entertaining. It's got to be gripping. But at the same time, you're not going to dumb it down and make it, you know, pretend that you've got to make it easier in any way. It's just, if you like, the demands of Broadway are very high. People want something quite exceptional. And so in a sense, what happens, I feel, is it makes me step up. I've got to step up, take responsibility, and say this has got to be even better than it's been in the past. I don't know what I mean by better. I feel exhilarated by playing here. It's a challenge. I'm not going to pretend it isn't. And because it's such an unusual piece, of course, some people, as I say, some people who might want to go and see Sunset Boulevard or Mamma Mia and end up in The Encounter might be slightly shocked, and it might not be for them, but do you know what? For some people who go and see Mamma Mia, that might not be for them, and they thought it was going to be something different to what they had. So, of course, we're not going to please everybody, but the demands of a wide-ranging audience of such energy, and when they get it in New York with such generosity, the verbal and vocal reaction of a New York audience is quite unlike anything in Britain. People will say things. People will talk to me in the beginning, you know, or because they don't think they're being heard, they will vocalize the fact when I talk about the insects laying eggs in the wounds left by the thorns. People start to they vocally react, and that's quite different to both a British and a European audience, both of which have been subjected, I was about to say, to the show.
You mentioned your understudy, and I wanted to ask about him before I let you go. Richard Katz is the alternate performer, so if you're not on, he's you and Lauren and creates everything else on stage. When, and you also direct, so presumably you directed him. When he plays you, does he play you? Does he act like you?
No. He's tall, lanky, has a kind of, you know, he's from a quite a comedic background. He's also a writer, but he was somebody who watched me create this show and who I had a long dialogue with. So he knows what the show is about from its very inception. And that's an important thing because he knows what the heart of the piece is about. And he gives his own very distinct performance when he's on. Because it's a very demanding piece, I can't. Eight shows a week is tricky. I don't want to get injured doing it because there is a lot of physicality involved. It is the same show, but it also has its own distinct spin.
The Encounter is running at the Golden Theater on Broadway in New York City. Simon McBurney, I can't thank you enough for your time and for your work. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
The Encounter runs at the Golden Theater in New York City through January 8th. For more information, visit theencounterbroadway.com. That link will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.